The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
My next guest spent more than 40 years in Ireland's diplomatic service. He has worked as an ambassador in Malaysia, in Germany, the United Kingdom. And in August of 2022, he retired after spending 5 years as Irish ambassador to the United States. Now, to talk about all of this, we're joined by Dan Mulhall. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning to your listeners.
Now, I was just thinking when I was looking at your CV, you're almost like a Forrest Gump, because you were in Malaysia at the time of the tsunami and you had huge work to do there, repatriating Irish people. You were in Germany during the economic crisis when Europe was so central to us. You were in the UK during Brexit, and in the US you had to cope with Donald Trump.
Indeed, it's been a great privilege to serve Ireland in those positions. And as you say, they were all pretty hectic, and I suppose the most traumatic of all was the tsunami in Malaysia and Thailand. Well, Thailand particularly, where I spent 3 weeks in Phuket trying to track down Irish people, and that was a terrible experience. But I was happy to be able to support Irish families who were in distress. And then, of course, in Britain, I was probably one of the few ambassadors who, I was the only foreign ambassador who actually took a position and tried to, draw to the attention of people in Britain the fact that Brexit was going to have implications for British-Irish relations and for Northern Ireland, and so it has turned out to be the case. And then, of course, in America, I served as ambassador with Donald Trump as president, and then for the last year and a half with President Joe Biden. So, yes, it's been an active and interesting and challenging career in many ways.
Now, by very definition, as a member of the diplomatic corps, you have to be diplomatic.
Correct.
But it must have been difficult during the Brexit time when you could see a complete indifference on the part of many of the protagonists to Northern Ireland and the border, and having learned to enjoy the single market and free passage across the border for goods and services and for people, it must have been a frustration to see how blind so many people were to the situation on the island of Ireland.
As I would say, I was tearing my hair out a lot of the time during that referendum campaign, because I could see that Northern Ireland was being brushed aside. The sort of word was, nothing will change, everything's fine, no problem, what's the issue? And people, I think, bought that. And of course, there was a focus on other things. And I think Brexit was a serious misstep for Britain, but it's a reality. We have to deal with it. And the last number of years have been dealing with the consequences, the fallout from Brexit, which have gone on longer and have been more difficult, I think, than anybody would have expected in advance.
Dealing with Britain, I mean, the term perfidious Albion has been there for centuries.
Well, I would never use that kind of term, of course, as an ambassador. As
of course not.
Even in retirement, Pat.
But, I mean, that's an ancient term, and it goes back to the French, I think, regarding Britain as perfidious. But was it more difficult when you could no longer see Britain as the honest broker that it might have been perceived to be under previous prime ministers? And then you've got someone like Boris Johnson, and you don't feel you can trust that kind of person anymore.
Well, of course, I arrived in London in the aftermath of Queen Elizabeth's visit to Ireland, which was a historical occasion by any standard. And then I was also the ambassador in London during the visit of President Higgins. So I would say that in 2014-15, just in the wake of those two visits, the relationship between our two countries had come to a kind of a peak of satisfaction. And it was kind of bordering on perfection, if you like, between two neighboring countries. Yeah. And then along comes Brexit to throw a spanner in the works in a big way. And I was very conscious of that from the beginning, because from the time I arrived in Britain, there was talk of a referendum, and then the referendum was announced, and then it happened, and so forth. So, yes, I mean, it has been a difficult time, I would say, for British-Irish relations. After that, the ascent to the Everest of positive relations, we're now down somewhere in the foothills. And, of course, the important thing for me is that, we can't afford to have bad relations with our nearest neighbour. Like, no matter what you do, you have to be on good terms with your nearest neighbour. And Britain is still a hugely important country for Ireland. So I would hope that when this Brexit, monkey gets off the back, that relations will find a new equilibrium and a new era of satisfaction and positive development, as we saw is entirely possible in the period before and after the two-state visits in 2011 and 2014.
Now, politicians obviously have their own agendas. They, you know, the principal job of a politician, as my former colleague here, Ivan Yates, used to remark, was to get himself or herself re-elected. That's their principal preoccupation. But you would have been dealing with permanent civil servants, you know, who are there for the long haul, who maybe understand the minutiae of the way things work. Were they tearing their hair out too?
I think they were, many of them. I mean, obviously, you know, there were people obviously within the British civil service. We've now seen some of them coming into the public arena, like Lord David Frost, who was a civil servant, was a diplomat in his day, and he's become a very staunch advocate of Brexit. But I would say most of the people that I would have met in London would have been sceptical or negative about Brexit. And I remember, in fact, the day the referendum result was announced, there was a briefing at the Foreign Office, and it was like a wake, because everyone there was sort of shell-shocked, not just the ambassadors who were being briefed, but also the briefers. And they made it quite clear that they hadn't expected this, they were shocked by it, but that they would have to implement government policy, and that was their job, and we all understood that, and things went on. But yes, I mean, it was a difficult time for everyone, and I do believe that a lot of people in Britain, a lot of people that know what's going on, are not happy with the direction of travel. But it's very difficult for a country like Britain to reverse course on something like this. In fact, I don't hold any hope of Britain rejoining anytime soon. I think in the sort of middle to long term, yes, it's entirely possible. But I think it would be very difficult to reverse course at this stage for a country like Britain.
So you were there. Obviously, David Cameron was the one who called the referendum, and you had then Theresa May, and ultimately the Boris Johnson on the horizon. But you off to Washington, and soon after arrival, Donald Trump. What did you make of the Trump administration?
Well, of course, I always say to people that diplomats do not design the course on which we have to operate. That is, you know, the terrain is fixed by the people of the country that you're accredited to, in this case, the United States. The people of the United States elected Donald Trump, and he was the president, and he set the agenda, and you had to find a way of dealing with that. To be frank with you, Donald Trump didn't do anything during his 4 years in office to harm Irish interests, I have to say that. I think he had a fondness for Ireland, mainly because he had good experience in Ireland when he was acquiring and then developing his golf course down in Doombeg. And I know he's very proud of that course. And I remember actually visiting Doombeg with him when he came to Ireland there during his term of office. So while he was enthusiastic about Brexit in general, he and the people around him also understood that the situation in Northern Ireland was complicated, and therefore they held back from ever doing anything that would have been negative to us in a Northern Ireland context. But of course, the big difference with Joe Biden is that he has a kind of a sentimental, genuine, lifelong interest in Ireland and his Irish heritage, and that of course makes a big difference to the way in which things pan out under the Biden administration.
Now, the difference, I suppose, between serving in be it Germany or the UK with the United States is that there's a kind of a wholesale changing of the guard with every new president. So, you know, where you might be dealing with a permanent civil servant service dealing in the UK or Germany, it's different in Washington. At a lower level, there will be a permanent civil service. But some of the key people that you'd be meeting would be, you know, Trump people or Biden people.
Yes, I mean, like all diplomats, you have to find a way of navigating the terrain you find yourself on. So we were fortunate that I was able to develop good relations with a number of people who were close to President Trump. Mick Mulvaney, who was his chief of staff at one stage, Kevin Hassett, who was his economic advisor, Robert O'Brien, who was his national security advisor. And from their names, you can tell that all of them have Irish heritage. And that was certainly very helpful. And I became friendly with them. And if I had an issue, I could always talk to them about it and try to make sure I understood what was happening within the administration by tapping into my friendship with them. But then, of course, when the Biden administration came along, there was a new group of people that I engaged with. And again, a lot of those, like Mike Donilon, the speech writer, has an Irish background. Samantha Power runs USAID. General Mally Dillon, who's the deputy chief of staff. So, you know, you had to sort of develop a new sort of cadre of people that you could kind of engage with. And, of course, they tended to have a more open attitude because they didn't have the complication of a president who was pro-Brexit in the case of Donald Trump. Yeah. That's not the case with Joe Biden. Likewise, they didn't have a president who was hostile to the European Union, which was the case with Donald Trump, but not with Joe Biden. So the environment did certainly change. But I had probably the same number of people I could connect with within the system, you know, in both administrations, because that's what you have to do. You have to find the appropriate channels to get your ideas and your information and get your briefings to reach the appropriate people within the system.
Now, we have, as you say, a president at the moment who's very fond of Ireland and who genuinely feels that in his blood and his bones. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to help the undocumented Irish.
No, because that would require, I mean, I was through this for 5 years and we got very close indeed to at least one breakthrough, a new visa program specifically for Ireland that was blocked by a single senator who was able to do that. That's the way the American system works. So, I mean, if it could have been done by executive order, you know, I think President Trump would have done it. But we went through all of that and discovered it would be necessary to have some kind of legislation, and we weren't able to get that legislation through. And even the current administration, which really does want to prioritize immigration for the last 2 years, hasn't been able to make any headway on it. I think the best prospect of an outcome would be a general dealing with the undocumented. Because remember, the Irish, whatever the number might be, and that number, you know, that the estimates vary greatly from time to time. But whatever it is, it's a tiny percentage of the maybe 10 million people who are undocumented in the United States. So I think if there is to be a solution, it's probably going to come from a more general piece of legislation that provides a pathway to legal status for a range of undocumented people, including the Irish.
Finally, Dan, you were there in Belfast when the Good Friday Agreement was signed. We're coming up to the anniversary now, the 25th anniversary of the signing of that document. America gets it. Europe gets it. Do you hope that everything will be resolved by that anniversary?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, as I say, I was there 25 years ago. I believe that this anniversary is an important opportunity to remind ourselves and others just how much has changed for the better in Ireland over the last 25 years. I mean, I had when I was a press officer in Dublin, you know, before the Good Friday Agreement, I had this dire responsibility to every couple of nights to write a statement for the then minister condemning the latest atrocity in Northern Ireland. So I'm very conscious of how much has changed for the better in Northern Ireland. I do hope that the anniversary will be an opportunity to remind everyone, and certainly Irish Americans are very focused on this, and they are hugely supportive of the Good Friday Agreement. They see themselves as having helped to deliver that agreement, and I believe they're right in that, because I remember the influence that President Clinton brought to bear and the influence that Senator George Mitchell brought to bear at that time. So I think this is an opportunity for everyone to sit back and think about the progress that's been made and how we find a way of moving forward from here. I'm hopeful that the stalemate surrounding the Northern Ireland Protocol can be resolved, but obviously I'm not involved any longer, so I don't have any inside information. But I would hope that a solution can be found, a reasonable solution that will minimise the inconvenience for people in Northern Ireland, okay, but will also keep the border on the island of Ireland open in perpetuity.
And so say all of us. Dan Mulhall, former Irish ambassador to the United States, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.